welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. And tonight we're going to be talking about The Little Prince. It's season 5, episode 4. We just got finished watching it, at least those of us in the Pacific time zone. Some of us have stayed up late to participate in the podcast or call in or chat. So, I've got a couple of people called in today. We've got Congested, who of course runs the Audibly Lost site. How's it going tonight, Congested?
It's going good. Though I will say I have not updated the blog at all this season, and I don't really plan to. So for now, I'm just Congested.
Cool.
No site attached.
Okay. Well, we always appreciate all the work that you've put into Lost. I know you've done a lot you worked with Dark UFO and stuff like that before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've also got Donna War called in, and she runs the Lost Fashion Review and also posts on Big O's Cranky Fanatic site. How's it going, Don?
It's fine. How are you?
Good. Great to have you called in as well. So I'm going to ask both of you to jump in anytime you've got any comments while we're discussing the show tonight.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. So before we get into The Little Prince, I just wanted to talk about a couple of things that I've got kind of in the works for the blog and that will also kind of come to the podcast. Right now I'm working on a couple of different articles. One of them is kind of a recap of the Lost alternate reality games that have happened since the last, during the hiatus, basically. And there were kind of two or three things that all sort of tied in together in some way or another. And so I'm putting together a blog post about that. And what I'll probably do, I'm not sure if I'll record that live, but one way or another, I'll put that up in the podcast feed for those who are subscribed directly to either directly to my podcast or on the Lost Podcasting Network. You should get that once I finish with those. It may take me a couple weeks. The other one that I'm writing about is something that I kind of just stumbled upon on Lostpedia the other day. If you remember, quite a while back, there was some discussion about an other who was originally seen as a tail section survivor, and on the Generally Speaking Weekly Lost podcast, they called him Mr. Squinty. And so a while back, I had posted about that on my blog, and also named somebody else that they had in their screenshot as a possible person who was the tail section person who ended up with the others. And that particular person, it turned out, I named her Ms. Dreadlocks, since the Generally Speaking folks hadn't given her a name. And it turns out that it's actually two different actresses. If you look at some other screenshots that I've got up on Lostpedia, you can tell they are two different actresses. And anyway, so as I was kind of researching all this on Lostpedia, I started to notice that there are actually a couple of other people who were among the Flight 815 survivors who later were others. And so my whole blog post that I'm working on is kind of a discussion of, whether this is just kind of a coincidence, just extras getting reused, as part of the show-making process, or whether we're supposed to see a connection between any of those people and the others, like maybe they defected to the others, or so I've got some other theories about that and some possibilities. Kind of have some different thoughts based on each character, so look forward to those coming up soon, probably within the next couple weeks or so on the blog. All right. So, and then one more thing before we get into this week's episode, just to review the pop-up notes for Jughead, which was last week's episode, episode 3 of season 5. One of the pop-ups that they showed in the recap was, it said, the other's primary objective is to protect the island at all costs. So this, I don't know if it's a huge revelation. I mean, we kind of sort of knew that to some degree, but I don't know if we necessarily knew it was the other's primary objective. So that was a little bit of information that is at least somewhat what new to us. The other's primary objective is to protect the island at all costs. Another thing is, this wasn't in a pop-up, but just something that I kind of thought of as I was going through the episode. Dan told Ellie, "You look so much like someone I used to know." And when I first watched the episode last week, I thought, you know, always talking about Teresa, the one that he kind of messed up through his failed experiments, and the university tried to cover up Charles Widmore's helping her out and all that. I was thinking maybe he meant that person, although I didn't really see much resemblance. But, of course, watching the episode again, now that I've kind of got at this in the context of, okay, Ellie is Eloise Hawking, this is Dan's mom, it makes a lot more sense for Dan to have told Ellie, you look so much like someone I used to know, if he was referring to his mother. So I suspect that that's why they threw that line in there. And there was another line that was really similar to that, that was kind of a big tell, if you will, in this week's episode too, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and jump right into this week's episode. First of all, the episode title for episode 4 is The Little Prince, and my wife, Kylie, called that. We were talking about it earlier tonight before, you know, the show was on. She's like, "What's the title of this week's episode?" And I told her The Little Prince, and she hardly thought about it at all, and she goes, "You think it's about Aaron?" And I'm like, "Huh, well, yeah, I guess you're probably right." And sure enough, she had that right on. The Little Prince. I don't know, my wife's got an insight into things like that, I guess. But the episode definitely was centered quite a bit around Aaron. I don't know if you could exactly call it an Aaron-centric episode, because it wasn't really like from his point of view, but a lot of the plot, at least in the flash-forwards, definitely revolved around Aaron. And the whole lawyer plot to take Aaron away and things like that. Icebird in the chat says it was Kate-centric, I think. Yeah, if you want to probably tie it to somebody, I guess maybe Kate is the most likely, it seems. Although they did really kind of show, I don't know, a few different sides of things. So in a flash forward, kind of at the I take it back. This starts out with a flashback, really. Jack and Kate and baby Aaron are on the boat, and they're discussing, you know, what's going to happen to Aaron. Kate is holding Aaron. And she suggests to Jack that they say that the baby is hers, because she says, "I can't lose him too." She just got finished saying, you know, "I lost Sawyer," and Jack says, "Well, you know, we don't know he's dead." And she says, "Well, but I'm, you know, not with him anymore." And so she says she can't lose Aaron too. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, we hadn't really on the island seen that much of a connection between Kate and Aaron, although we get that a little bit later in the episode. You know, basically when they jump through time, one of the moments where they jump is when Claire is giving birth to Aaron, and we see, you know, Sawyer sees Kate delivering the baby. And so that, I guess, is kind of where Kate's love for Aaron really sort of started on the island. We'll kind of get back to that part of the show in a few minutes. So it's Kate's idea to take Aaron. And Jack says to Kate, you know, make sure, you know, he asks her basically, "Are you going to be on my side? Because I'm going to have to present this to everybody and really make them decide to lie about what happened on the island. Are you with me?" And she says, "Jack, I'm always with you." So it was kind of, we had a skater moment with, like, you know, I can't lose Sawyer, you know, I already lost Sawyer. And then we have, like, definitely a Jader moment, too, where Jack says, Kate says to Jack, "I've always been with you, or always been on your side." It's kind of funny how they like to tease people who are in one camp or the other. I always think that's funny anyway. Again, feel free to jump in anytime if you've got any ideas or comments on anything. Dano at Large in the chat says, "I'm having trouble with the Oceanic 6 story. The roadblocks all seem manufactured. We know what's going to happen. The island story has more mystery." Yeah, obviously things, you know, none of the story, especially with Kate and Aaron, ever made any sense. I mean, that was obviously the most bizarre thing that they could have done, was say, oh yeah, Kate was pregnant before she was on the plane, and she had the baby. I mean, like, there was absolutely no evidence to that, so that none of that made sense from the get-go. So anyway, we'll kind of get back into that whole storyline in just a minute. So then we get into a flash forward. It says this is 3 years later, so we're kind of back in the same place that we were before, where Ben is trying to gather people to get them back to the island. Kate is still with Sun in her, I guess, hotel room, and Kate borrows a dress from Sun, and she leaves Sun to with Aaron. So Sun's going to babysit Aaron, and I didn't get this, and maybe somebody else figured this out, but I wasn't really sure at that point in the episode where Kate was going. But of course we find out shortly thereafter that she's going to confront the lawyer. And I was thinking to myself, is Sun going to take a blood sample from Aaron? You know, what's going to go on with Sun babysitting Aaron? I just can't see anything good coming from that. Because up to that point, you know, I still thought it might be possible that Sun was behind the lawyer. And, of course, it turns out later in the episode that that's not the case. It turns out that it's actually Ben who is behind it all. And interestingly, so Sun, right after Kate walks out, Sun gets a package, and it contains some documents. And, Congested, you thought the same thing as I did. Well, I want to see a screen cap of what that document says. And just before we started recording, Congested sent me a link to it's via Dark UFO's site, losteastereggs.blogspot.com, and they actually link to a picture posted by Get Lost Podcast. And they've got a good screenshot. You can read some of the text on the document, and it says it's from Surveillance Data Investigators Incorporated. And there's a little bit more that is, you know, is legible. Basically, it looks like a report, like a private investigation report. Somebody is following somebody, trying to find out. There's a name on there. I just noticed. There's a name that says Lee Chin. Replied that Lee Chin did not live there. So there may be some other character that may be introduced that was named on this form. So I'll put a link up to that in the show notes. And for those of you who are in the chat right now, I'll repaste that link that that Congested pasted earlier.
Yeah. And, like, one of the lines is, like, subject answered the telephone and replied that Lee Chin was dead, a victim of suicide.
Oh, interesting.
So, I don't know. Something with Lee Chin. Yeah.
Yeah, so
something's going on there.
Something is definitely going on that's, you know, I mean, this document, I mean, obviously the props mean something, especially when they zoom that far in on it so you can actually read it in a screenshot.
Yeah.
And so this is definitely a plot line that we haven't gotten into yet, and so it'll be interesting to see how all of this kind of stuff ties together. See, when I was watching the episode, I just assumed that all of this kind of came from Widmore or people who worked with Widmore, and that could still be the case. But it's interesting now that they're introducing some new characters through this document. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen there. Among the other items, she sees a photograph. This is all stuff that's in the package. She also sees a photograph of Ben and Jack, and this is when Jack still has this scraggly beard. So somebody's been following them and taking pictures. And there's also a box of chocolates. And she, my wife, of course, always so intuitive. Before Sun even opens the box, she goes, "It's a gun." And so Sun opens the box, and it's chocolates. And then Kylie goes, "Oh." And then Sun pulls up the chocolates, and there's a gun underneath, and my wife is just like, yep. I really wish that she could, she doesn't like staying up late. I wish I could have her on the show so I could have her brag about all these moments that she, where she totally knew what was going to happen. But, so that's the stuff that's in Sun's package. So again, I mean, kind of the whole, she wants to kill Ben. She has told Charles Widmore she wants to kill Ben. And so that sort of led me to believe this whole package all was all related to Widmore. And so I'm really curious who this Lee Chin is and how in the world that ties in with Ben and Widmore. So hopefully they'll explore that in a in an upcoming episode. All right, so also in a flash forward, Saeed is in the hospital. Of course, Jack is in big trouble because he's not supposed to practice anymore, and he brought somebody into the hospital. And while Jack is out in the hallway discussing this and then taking a call from Hurley, who's calling from the slammer, someone walks into Saeed's room and says that he's got some medicine that he'll put in his IV. And, of course, Saeed's like, oh, okay, this guy's phony. The guy, this, you know, fake orderly, he turns around and shoots two darts where Saeed had just been lying in the bed. And Saeed jumps at him from the side, you know, is strangling him and says, who do you work for? And the guy says, check my pocket. So Saeed shoots him with the tranks and pulls a little, you know, piece of paper out of the guy's pocket, and it has an address on it. And Jack, you know, when Saeed shows this to Jack, Jack goes, that's Kate's address. You know, they realize that that guy has something to do with Kate. And, you know, of course, from our perspective, we're thinking, okay, this guy must have something to do with the investigation and all that. So based on what we find out later in the episode, that it was really Ben who was in charge of, you know, who hired this lawyer for various things, to get Hurley out of jail, to investigate, you know, Aaron, that, you know, it's sort of strange because this leads us to believe that this guy was hired by Ben to come after Saeed, and I don't get that. Does anybody have any insight into what in the world that might mean? Was this all just a play? I mean, are they trying to mess around with their mind? You know, was Ben just trying to mess with them, or what's going on here?
That's a good question. I've been wondering who, because if Saeed's on Ben's side, then they should be other people, shouldn't they? The people coming after him? I don't know. I never really did get that. I figured it would stick out later.
By the way, that's the voice of Christina, a.k.a. Ms. Amaris, in the chat. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. anybody, I don't know, anybody else have any thoughts about that? Bailey Bear asks the same thing in the chat, the kind of the thing that I'm trying to get at. Did Ben hire the guy that was attacking Saeed?
Why would Ben want to knock Saeed out if Saeed's already in the right location? Because, I mean, the whole point is to get everyone to L.A. so that way.
All right. And Saeed's Ben's hitman, so they should be people.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben and Saeed should be on the same side, theoretically. Hard to tell with Ben, though, isn't he sneaky?
Yeah. So this is kind of strange because, you know, now, okay, well, here's a possibility. Congested posted in the chat, it's probably Widmore's people. And so do you want to expound on that at all, Congested?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've seen Saeed, you know, up against a group of people before. He did kill one of Widmore's people already. In Iraq. I just imagine that, you know, they set up, I guess, in the shape of things to come, this whole thing between Widmore and Ben. And, you know, here we are. That was the shape of things to come, and we are now, you know, fleshing out what is happening. So I imagine it's Widmore's people.
Okay, well, here's my take on it. I mean, based on that idea, I'm going to roll with that because I tend to agree that it doesn't make any sense at all for Ben to have sent, you know, this assassin, you know, after Saeed when he's obviously trying to get Saeed back to Island. Now, granted, this guy in the hospital just had Tranks, so he wasn't going to kill Saeed, but nevertheless, you know, that whole thing seems weird. But if it's what's going on is that, you know, and again, by the way, this guy had Kate's address in his pocket. Maybe what's going on here is that at the same time as Ben has got all this going on to try to get these people back to the island, maybe Charles Widmore is also investigating. I mean, we already kind of know that Charles Widmore is sending people after Saeed, and so it seems to make sense that Charles Widmore is then checking up on Kate or doing some sort of investigation. But does Charles Widmore want them to tranquilize Kate and Aaron and take them? And if so, why? And why is he just going after, it seems like, just going after Saeed and Kate? I don't know. It's all very strange, and I don't quite get what's going on there.
Well, wait, but Ben is the one that was after Aaron.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, you know, let's assume just for the moment that this guy that was going after Saeed in the hospital works for Charles Widmore. That seems to be the most logical answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this guy who's going after Saeed, who works for Charles Widmore, has Kate's address in his pocket. So what was he going to do with Kate's address?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Funny. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, I just got a whole theory here now. That I think... was it John Carter in the chat room here? He said at the same time I thought that this is Ben that's after Saeed, because Saeed went to go get Hurley to keep him away from Ben.
Right, because Saeed said don't ever trust anything that Ben says, or do just the opposite of what Ben
right.
says.
Right, so Saeed's not on Ben's team right now. So Ben's trying to get him tranquilized so he can take him back to the island.
But Saeed was on Ben's team when they first got off the island. So I think the better question would be, why doesn't Saeed trust Ben 3 years later?
Yeah, something happened, I don't know what, but I think that's why he's got men trying to tranquilize Saeed so that he can get him back to the island.
Yeah, because it seems like him and Kate would be the two people opposed to it. Like, yeah, definitely Saeed and Kate would be the two people out of the Oceanic Six who would be most opposed to going back to the island.
Uh-huh, right. So maybe this is, like, Ben's backup plan, but again, I mean, it seems like it's... Okay, so maybe the guy that went after Saeed in the hospital really did work for Ben, and this was like a backup plan. Ben wanted to make sure everything happened, and so he was going to trank Saeed and bring him, you know, to where he needed to be so that they could all get back to the island just in case Saeed was going to do anything wrong, and then he was going to have that same guy go after Kate and tranquilize her and take Aaron and Kate. Maybe that was Ben's backup plan all along.
Ben has crappy backup plans. Like, I mean, if you're trying to convince someone to do something for you, the last thing you should be doing is tranking them.
Well, maybe Widmore is trying to get back
to
the island.
No, but that doesn't work. And here's why it doesn't work. Because Saeed had already killed the guy at Santa Rosa, and Hurley and Saeed had left Santa Rosa by the time Jack was with Ben, and then Ben says to Jack, let's go to Santa Rosa to get Hurley. But by then, but see, if it had been Ben's people, he would have known that all this other stuff was going on, that there was a guy in front of Santa Rosa, you know. See, why would Ben have had the guy sitting in front of Santa Rosa if he was going to go there, if he was right about to go there to pick up Hurley?
Maybe to make sure Hurley didn't try to bust out.
Yeah, but then Saeed kills the guy. It just seems a little weird that he would then be heading there. I don't know.
Right.
And
I mean,
not know.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the sake of simplicity, I mean, I don't know. I guess we probably assumed that the guy that was outside of Santa Rosa was working for the bad guys, who we assumed would be Widmore. So, but putting that aside, I mean, let's just say that this one guy in the hospital, if we're just looking at him, he could have been hired maybe by Ben as a backup plan. But I could see it the other way. The only question I have about that is, if that guy was working for Widmore, then why was he sending people to tranquilize Saeed and Kate? That's what I don't get.
Yeah, well, but see, that guy was using tranquilizers, but so were the people in Saeed's hotel room. So, and those people were attacking Saeed just after he had left Santa Rosa. I just don't see that they could be attached to Ben.
Well, I mean, obviously thinking, they don't want to kill Saeed. You know, obviously.
I'm thinking
like,
they need him alive, like both of them. Like, this is I think Widmore, maybe Widmore is sending people too. Maybe they both are trying to get back to the island. Maybe they both need them, all six of them, and they need them alive.
Okay. Now that's interesting. So maybe Charles Widmore needs to get everybody back down, and whoever gets them back to the island first wins.
Yeah,
something.
Maybe that's what's going on.
Now, this has been bugging me, and I know I wanted to ask it. Now, do they just need just the Oceanic Six, or are we going to need Desmond and Lapidus to go back too?
I think
well,
we can get them too.
Why else would Widmore send? I mean, because why else would Widmore send Desmond to L.A.? You know, like if that wasn't a common meeting place, is what the way I was thinking about it.
Right, and Lapidus hasn't had like a. I think he'll be back. I don't think he's done.
Okay, well, that's interesting. The only thing is, we haven't seen Ben go after Frank Lapidus or Desmond yet. He's only gathering the Oceanic Six. And so that sort of leads me to believe that, at least as far as Ben knows, he just needs to get the Oceanic Six back. Plus John Locke for some reason, even though he wasn't part of the Oceanic Six. So, I don't know. If John Locke also needs to get back to the island, or of course, maybe it's the Oceanic Six plus John Locke because he's the current leader of the others. Maybe that's why. I don't know. There's been a lot of question, a lot of speculation about that. Like, what's going on with Frank Lapidus? Does Desmond need to get back to the island?
And Walt.
And Walt. Right.
Michael.
Michael, I would guess that he's
Michael's
probably dead.
Michael was standing next to the bomb when it blew up.
Michael's definitely still dead.
You know, unless they do some weird, like, Christian Shepherd coming back to life as some sort of weird island guy thing with Michael. But I think the fans would really hate that, because I know there's a lot of Michael haters out there. And I just think that would be the last straw for them if he came back as like an undead, you know, Claire Christian, like zombie person.
I would totally stop watching. I would have to.
But yeah, that's like a big thing. Like why the six? Why and then like why not others? We're thinking of it in terms of like, oh, you need X number of people to get back to the island. Maybe it's something like, you know, each one of them has to do something when they get back. Maybe it really is just those specific six need to get back, like
for
more character-driven reasons as opposed to physical, like we need this person to come back.
Uh-huh.
Do you think it has something to do with, I mean, obviously it has something to do with the whole time traveling thing, you know, the island moving and stuff, that the Oceanic Six need to come back so that way, you know, if it won't actually stop it, it'll at least, you know, do it to help. So I'm wondering if that just means that it's a reference back to the Constant from last season, you know, and that those Oceanic Six need to be back there so that way they can be the other Losties Constants, so that way the island stops moving, maybe.
These pointed out something kind of interesting in the chat, by the way. If you know, some of these people were on Jacob's list, but then again, you know, we know some of them aren't. Like Jack, for example, wasn't on Jacob's list. But yeah, there's this whole idea. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, lists in the show, and I don't know whether Jacob's list has anything to do with it. Maybe Jacob has a purpose for those specific people, like you're saying. Maybe it's just that this, you know, like Congesta was saying, maybe there's specific reasons that those specific people have to come back, but not necessarily everybody. Like Frank Lapidus may not need to come back. Desmond may not need to come back. They weren't part of the sort of unfinished business with Flight 815 people. Maybe that's what's going on. Jacob or the island or whatever, however you want to look at it, has some purpose specifically for the Oceanic, or the people who are on Oceanic Flight 815. So maybe that's it. Who knows? All right, we could speculate about that a lot. Okay, well, one last comment on that. Go ahead.
Oh, me?
Yeah, I think you were going to say something else.
Oh, no, I was just sort of agreeing with you. Like, yeah, like, you know, it could be something like that. I mean, the only thing with Desmond is, I mean, it to me it seems like they're kind of setting him up to be someone who needs to go back. Like, they're putting him physically with the rest of them back in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like, you know, Desmond will be, if they go back, going back with them, but I don't know. And then that obviously leaves Penny and Charlie.
Everyone else is converging in L.A. right now, too, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, Whitmore just gave Desmond an address in L.A., so I don't know.
Right. All right, so getting back to the episode, the next thing I've got in my notes is that back on the island, after another time jump, Locke sees the beam of light coming up from the hatch the night that Boone died. And shortly after that, Sawyer watches Claire give birth to Aaron, and Kate is there helping Claire, and it was kind of a touching scene. You know, Kate is there with Claire. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that scene was never actually on the show. Am I right about that?
No, that scene was on the show.
It was?
It was the episode where, I forgot the name of the episode where Boone dies and Claire gives birth. I mean, that footage of Claire is from that episode.
Okay, so that was stock footage that we were seeing and not new stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what I thought was interesting about that, and by the way, in the chat, let's see, somebody said, Hey Bulldog said, not from that angle. And that's kind of what I was thinking. Well, I mean, when I was looking at that scene, I mean, that's like how Kate looked, like exactly how Kate looked, you know, back in whatever it was that season one?
Well, there was one shot that seemed like it was not, like, that they reshot, which was the one that's sort of from Sawyer's perspective, and you see Claire's back. But then as they start zooming in, I think they were using footage from that episode. And that episode would have been The Greater Good, I think. It's either Do No Harm or The Greater Good, I forget. No, it's Do No Harm.
So, it was kind of interesting, though, just to see that. let's see. So I guess the whole point of, and I, by the way, I had totally forgotten that Boone died the same night that Aaron was born. That was kind of cool how one was.
Well, yeah, because that's like the night where, you know, after Boone dies, Locke goes, he leaves the caves and goes to the hatch, and yeah.
Right, and the beam of light.
Absolutely,
and all
pounding
that.
on the hatch.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing that they're trying to show us with, other than of course reminding us of these themes, Dano at Large in the chat says death and birth, loss and redemption, and all that sort of thing. But aside from that, you know, the key thing I think that they were trying to show us with this is they wanted Sawyer to see how much Kate loves Aaron, you know, and because in that scene, I mean, this is really, you know, that's the first time or the earliest point in time where Kate really sort of has a connection with Aaron. And so when Sawyer sees that, I think at that moment he started to feel a little bit guilty for wanting Kate to come back to the island, because that was a selfish thing. I mean, he wanted Kate to come back just because he liked Kate. But, you know, and so I think maybe at that moment he started to consider that, you know, maybe he made the wrong choice to, you know, to go along with Locke's plan and try to get Kate back on the island. Because, you know, Kate, why wouldn't she be happy with Aaron? And I think Sawyer just wants Aaron to be, you know, and Kate to be happy.
But, you know, Sawyer doesn't know that Kate is taking care of Aaron at this point. I mean, I don't know. I saw that more just as of a thing like Sawyer saw Kate, and like she was right there and he was right there, and he knew he couldn't do anything to, you know, he loves her, but he can't, you know, she's right there in front of his eyes and he can't do anything. And I don't know. Yeah. I think it was just more about him seeing Kate than, I think for the audience, it was to sort of remind the audience that Kate does have that attachment to Aaron. Like, definitely the significance of the scene was that she was giving birth, you know, she was giving birth to Aaron, or, you know, that she was delivering the baby.
Right, right. Well, you bring up a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, and I stand corrected. So that's true, because really, I think, wasn't it Sun who had been holding Aaron for a while, and then she handed...
It was in the finale. Sawyer had gotten back to the beach with Aaron, and then Kate said to Sun, Sun, take Aaron, we're going to go. And that was when Kate and Sawyer... we're going to go back to get Jack, who was going to the heading to the helicopter. And then Son had Aaron on the freighter.
Right.
And then, you know, when they ended up on the freighter, on the helicopter, Kate reunited with Aaron.
Right. Right. Kate took the baby back, or sort of really Son handed the baby to Kate. yeah. So, well, I don't know. At least there was, I guess, some sort of a hint that Kate, I don't know, may have some connection with Aaron, but really, you're right. It wasn't completely spelled out, and nobody had made any final decisions about who was going to take Aaron, and, you know, Sawyer certainly wouldn't know that Kate was going to claim Aaron as her own baby or anything like that.
Yeah,
so that's a good point.
I think, you know, like Kate's, like in Eggtown, that was when they really started showing Kate sort of interacting with Aaron. It was when... like, Claire wanted her to hold Aaron, and then Claire is telling her about, you know, Aaron sleeps this way. Aaron can sleep through anything, you know, when she's playing the music, and that's sort of how Kate learned that stuff. And then I guess, you know, Kate took it upon herself to, you know, as we saw in this episode, to want to actually care for him or herself.
She echoed that line back to Jack, too, of like, oh, he can sleep through anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay, so... The next thing I've got in my notes, just to kind of keep things moving along, there was an ad for a new series called The Unusuals, which stars Harold Perrineau Jr., who played Michael. So as someone mentioned in the chat, I think earlier, I think a couple people talked about that Michael's actually, you know, the actor who plays Michael is actually going to be in another show. So it's just funny. Like last week we had this ad for, you know, for Buffalo style, you know, hot wings, and it's got Walt in it. And then this week we've got an episode or an ad for a new series starring Michael. It's kind of funny to see that. And by the way, and later, what was it? There was also an ad later on for a new series called Castle, starring Nathan Fillion, who played. I neglected to mention, but they actually did run the ad for the Nathan Fillion series last week too. It's kind of funny though. I mean, seeing it's so brilliant the way that they're choosing to advertise those shows during Lost, so people will see that and go, oh, I know that actor. I watched, you know, that guy used to be on Lost. I need to watch that new show, or I need to go buy those chicken wings. So, anyway.
Well, the joke, like, we were, I think it was, like, in the Lostpedia chat room or something, we were talking about how, like, Walt appears in different places, like, he appears in front of Shannon and stuff. And it's like Walt appeared in this commercial for Buffalo Wings.
Oh, Walt. Can we have Walt back without Michael? That would probably be... I'm still hating on him. I'm sorry. Never liked Michael.
Yeah, I know. There's a whole like Michael haters like group at least on MySpace. I'm sure probably lots of other places too. But I don't know. I've never exactly been a Michael hater, but I do admit that it was really annoying. I got really old hearing him say, "My boy," you know, "the father's right." My wife and I joke about that all the time. Whenever we see, you know, Harold Perrineau Jr. on anything, or we're talking about Michael, it's the father's right. He's my boy. I gotta save my boy.
Yeah, I mean, like without going too much into it, it's like it wasn't really to me, it's not really hating on Michael. It's just the way they dealt with the character. It's like they, I think they really mishandled the character of Michael.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, they very forcefully showed that he was, you know, a father who was just absolutely going crazy because he finally got his son, you know, after all these years, and now he's, you know, someone has taken his boy away from him. And so, you know, I can totally understand how he's kind of crazy about that, but it was a little bit overkill the way that they did it on the show.
Yeah.
All right.
I liked Michael. I liked Emmy Lucia too. I was always like that. Lucia.
Yeah. All right. So we ended the last episode, by the way, with Charlotte having a nosebleed, and that sort of got resolved at the beginning of this episode. Now back on the island, Miles has a nosebleed, and Miles, you know, has heard this whole idea of temporal displacement, you know, from Dan by this point. And so he's like, you know, what's going on? Like, how come it's happening to me now? And Miles says, by the way, this I think is a key point. And I mentioned a little earlier, there was kind of another little hint in a comment that Dan made. This is it. Okay, so Miles says, I've never been here before 2 weeks ago. And Dan says, are you sure about that? And I think this is a major hint to what some fans have been speculating, that Miles was Dr. Pierre Chang's baby.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought, too. That's
I totally believe that Miles is the baby.
Okay, so are we all in agreement? Everybody's along with me on that one. All right.
I didn't believe it before, like that line. Yeah,
that was a rather strong hint, I think.
I wonder if when Dan said it last season, if he wasn't just directing that towards Charlotte, but he was also directing it towards Miles. Like when both of them are standing in the kitchen area.
Uh-huh.
You know, and Charlotte's like, oh, I think I'm going to stick around for a little while.
Yeah. So we already figured out, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, I don't know. The show's sort of handing us these things. Like, there's not too much mystery. I mean, we're kind of seeing through, like, the surface, you know, mysteries. Like, we obviously know that Dan Faraday's mom is Eloise Hawking, and I think we can all be pretty reasonably sure that Ellie is the same person as Eloise Hawking, and now, you know, they're really, really hinting strongly that Miles is going to, you know, be Dr. Chang's baby, so he started out on the island. Now, I don't know, and maybe I'm kind of getting my brain mixed up with Heroes here, but I wonder if there's any sort of connection with Miles, you know, having been on the island and his, you know, special ability to communicate with the dead. You know, we've got Ben, who was basically adopted from the Dharma Initiative into the Others clan because he was able to communicate with the dead. You know, Richard Alpert saw him, you know, talking with his dead mom, and so Richard Alpert said, we need that guy because we need him to talk to Jacob, I guess. That's always kind of been my assumption there. And so, you know, Miles is now this other person. In this case, it looks sort of like he was probably born on the island. And he seems to have this ability to communicate with the dead as well. Kind of similar to what's going on with Ben, and I don't know if there's any connection that has anything to do at all with him being Dr. Chang's baby, but I thought that was kind of interesting that Ben and Miles sort of have that little bit of a connection in that, you know, they can talk with dead people. Iceberg says, wait, Ben can talk to the dead? Well, I'm referring to you know, he's somebody who can see Jacob. He talks to Jacob, but he can't hear Jacob, at least in that scene where, you know, Ben and Locke both go to Jacob's cabin. Locke could hear Jacob saying, help me, I think it was. And Ben didn't hear it. He saw Jacob, and Locke didn't see Jacob, except for maybe a flash. You know, we as the audience saw a flash, and I don't know if that was supposed to be from Locke's perspective or what. But basically, Locke couldn't see Jacob, but he could hear him, and Ben couldn't hear Jacob, but he could see him. So they're sort
of... Well, and the other thing I think you're referring to is when Ben sees his dead mom, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I think I mentioned that. Maybe you missed that when the call got dropped.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I died.
Yeah, talk show's weird tonight. We've had a few people like dropping in and out. So, all right. So getting back to the island, so they get to the beach and they find an empty Dharma beer can, and they see an Ajira Airlines water bottle. And of course, Juliet explains, "Oh yes, well that's an airline that's based, I think, India," I think she said. And, you know, of course, Juliet knows exactly all about it, your airline, for some reason, and explains what's going on. But anybody who's not familiar with the Jira Airlines and is kind of wondering what in the heck that has to do with anything, that's the same company that was in the most recent Lost alternate reality game. And I think the website, if I'm not mistaken, is ajiraairlines.com. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's it, yeah.
Pull up the little article that I'm
writing. I will.
Yeah, ajiraairways.com is the website, ajiraairways.com. So Ajira Airways, yeah, so I'm not going to touch too much on the alternate reality game right now, but by the way, I honestly, like during the hiatus, I had very little time to play the alternate reality games. And so the write-up I'm doing about it is mostly based on what Lostpedia says. So if anyone has played all the way through, like any of the ARGs that have been going on during the hiatus, definitely send me an email and clue me in on any important things that might have come out of that.
I'll just say this because I kind of know what's going on with the ARGs. Like, they had an ARG originally for the fall, which was the Dharma, it was like a Dharma ARG, and that, like,
right.
Basically, like, you were going to get a job with Dharma, and that sort of seemed to collapse, and then as that ended, they
just collapsed. Yeah,
that's right,
because
they started doing all those videos, right?
Right, and so, yeah, I'm going to explain all of this in my article, but, yeah, so basically what happened was that they lost their funding and couldn't go through with the whole, you know, full-blown Dharma, you know, employee ARG that they were planning on. And so then that's kind of when they started the secret, you know, version of the official Lost podcast, which I didn't realize this until I started reading these articles on Lostpedia a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, great. So this whole time when I thought, hey, that's kind of weird, they haven't been doing any official Lost podcasts during the hiatus. Oh, well, guess what? They actually were, but not me.
Every week. Yeah.
I'm like, that's just great. Well, the reason I'm so irritated about that is because I actually signed up for the very first, you know, at dharmawantsyou.com, and I never got an email from them. And I was so mad, like, you know, because I assumed that, you know, once the whole thing was going to start, they were going to send me an email just like they did with Fine 815, and nope, nothing happened. You know, I think what, anyway, long story, but I'm kind of annoyed about that. And so I felt like I kind of got ripped off because, like, of course, I want to see those, and of course you can because they've got all the codes to get access to those on Lostpedia and elsewhere, but anyway. So,
yeah, but a lot of it was like, I mean, there's some cool stuff, but a lot of it too was just like, oh, sneak peek from future episodes, which, I mean, me, I don't like to know what's going to happen. Like, I'm very anti-spoiler, so, you know, I didn't watch a lot of the stuff they had anyway. So, I mean, you didn't miss much.
There's nothing, yeah.
I would say the biggest one you missed was like the one where it's Damon and Carlton in a flash forward.
That was cute.
That was great, yeah.
Okay.
But it wasn't important. It was just cute.
Yeah, it was just funny. It was like they did a flash forward. It was kind of like from the DVD of season 4, like the season 4 DVD, they have one where they're like, it's a flash forward of themselves. And it was a continuation of that flash forward where they tried to change the future and they couldn't. And yeah, you just got to watch it.
And then Bailey Bird in the chat says it's best to see them on YouTube, and that's the ones that I have seen. I've pulled up on YouTube. I think there were links to a couple of them at on Lostpedia, and I found some others, you know, after I started browsing through YouTube. Like I said, eventually I'm going to put up a post and kind of give links to some of that stuff and kind of explain. There were some revelations. I mean, just like there usually are on the official Lost podcast, there were some things that Damon and Carlton said, like in answering fan questions and things like that, that were kind of interesting and would, you know, are kind of good to know kind of things. So I'll watch as many of those as I can and give a little bit of coverage of that later on. But anyway, so that's what the deal was with the Ajira Airlines water bottle. Let's see. So Locke and the crew find a canoe on the beach. They take it. And by the way, this whole idea of them finding the Zodiac, like, they're jumping around through time. Are they stupid? Like, I don't get it. Like, I mean, obviously the clothes are jumping around through time with them, and those are, you know, not, you know, whatever I'm trying to find the word for, you know, they're not biological, like, living beings. The clothing is not, and yet it's jumping with them, and whatever they have on their person, like, you know, Locke's compass jumps with them. But I don't know, like, other objects around them, like, for example, I don't know, maybe all of the objects that happen to be there when they first started jumping through time are also jumping through time, and that's why they assumed that the Zodiac would be there. But I don't know. That's just weird to me. I don't know what to say about that. But they, for some reason, they assumed that the Zodiac would still be there. It wasn't. And so they find the canoe on the beach. They take it. And then someone shows up on another canoe behind them and starts shooting at them. And Juliet says it wasn't her people. She shoots back and kills one of them. And so the only real clue I think that we have on who that is that, you know, as I mentioned, there was a Dharma beer can on the beach. So it had to have been during a time when Dharma was on the island, or sometime after the Dharma was on the island, for there to be a Dharma beer can in that same time period. But as to who exactly that was, I mean, Juliet didn't think it was her people. I guess she could be wrong, but I don't know. Anyone have any theories on that?
Yeah. I think, you know, the Dharma beer can on the beach and the whole beach scene, it just showed a dried up beach camp. It was their beach camp, and uh-huh. it was clearly in the future.
Okay,
you know, Dan says in the first or second episode, we can either be in the past or in the future, and I think this is the first time we have seen the future. I mean, we've got the Ajira Airways thing. We've got, you know, unfamiliar things like the canoes and stuff. And I think that we saw a future version of the sort of abandoned beach camp. It was sort of, you know, run down, dried out. And part of that being dried out, you know, included the, you know, beer can. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know Sawyer mentions beer, but was there actually a beer can, or?
Yeah, there were a couple of
scattered
around.
Yeah, I took it as like it was all the food was gone because people had ate it all up. Like it was in the future. That was the camp that they made, but it was like abandoned because most of them were gone or dead, and the food's all gone, and like it was in the past.
And just my own sort of theory that I don't think is probably not unique to me, but I think like the people shooting at them were like people they know, because they made such a point of blacking out the people in the raft behind them or the canoe behind them. And I just think, like, how crazy would that be that later on we find out like a group of people we know go after this other group, and then it turns out, you know, they were shooting at each other. That would be crazy. But whatever.
It was like Bernard, you know, Bernard like just randomly shooting at Sawyer.
Yeah, Bernard and Rose.
okay, so there are a couple of comments in the chat that I kind of liked. Let's see, the Missing Toe commented, the camp looked post-attack with the others. Diesel 99 said Widmore's people finding the island, so maybe that could be what's going on. Iceberg says the Oceanic 6 coming back from Ajira Airlines, because that could have been 3 years later. Well, I mean, you know, it seems to make sense that they would still be flying Oceanic because of their golden tickets, but, you know, who knows. We really haven't had any, I mean, obviously Ajira Airlines has been around since at least like the present timeline, because Juliet already knows about it and she hasn't been to the future other than maybe this point when they're...
Yeah, I mean, she's been on the island for 3 years, so it's been around for at least 6 years.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily go that far, because we also know that the others had connections off the island, like, you know, Julia
oh, yeah.
was able to see her sister and all that.
And,
kind of
and Mikael, yeah, that's true.
Right. So, at the very least, you know, as of when Juliet was still an other, I guess we can say that much, that she knew about Ajira Airlines as far back as then. So, I don't know. So that kind of, if there's any theory out there that, you know, Oceanic Airlines maybe became Ajira Airways or however, that probably is not the case, I would say. or they could be maybe sister companies or something like that, I guess. But all right. John Carter says, I kind of assumed that Widmore bought out Oceanic when he cornered Sun in the airport because of his comment, they do what I tell them. So that's a good thought. Let's see. Okay, so in a flash forward, Claire's mother seems to be the one who sent the letters after Kate. And we find this out because Kate, cleverly, is following the lawyer after he leaves. Jack is there with Kate, you know, and he gets in the car with her, and she goes and follows the lawyer. The lawyer goes to where Claire's mother is staying. And that was, that whole scene was really bizarre and shocking. Claire's mother is in L.A. rather than in Australia, and so all of the pieces sure seem to fit that Claire's mother somehow found out, you know, maybe from Charles Widmore, maybe she put the pieces together after meeting Jack and Kate at Christian's funeral and meeting, you know, seeing Aaron there. In any case, we find out shortly after that Jack goes to talk with Mrs. Littleton. And she doesn't know about Aaron. She's never heard that name before. She doesn't recognize that, you know, who that is. And she still thinks that Claire died in the crash. And so the lawyer thing was a setup. And that was really, really weird. I mean, how in the world, of course, and again, we find out a moment later that the lawyer works for Ben. We see him show up, you know, Ben and Saeed are together. And the lawyer walks right up to Ben, and they have this conversation. He tells Ben that they don't have a solid case against Hugo Reyes Hurley because he was of course still inside the institution at the moment that the first guy that you know when Saeed killed the guy at 8:15 outside of the hospital. They have records that prove that Hurley was still inside at that time. And so he says, this is a clear-cut case, no worries, we'll get him, we'll bust him out. You know, he's not going to be in jail for much longer. So it's clear through this that obviously the lawyer works for Ben, and so it's not much of a jump to assume that all the other things that the lawyer is doing with, going after Kate's child, and then we find out, you know, she's setting up this whole thing with Claire's mom. And of course, later in the episode, Ben just outright admits to Kate what's going on. Let's see here. Any other comments on any of that?
Jack's reaction when he got back into the car was priceless. It was absolutely priceless.
He just looked like,
right, like, oh crap, I almost just did a bad thing. You know, I mean, because, like, I mean, I think that if Claire's mother hadn't cut him off, then he would have just spilled everything right then and there. You know.
Yeah, that's true. That was an amazing scene to find out, like, that she had no idea what Jack was talking about. And Jack probably felt like a total idiot. And then probably the feeling of, oh, my gosh, what's really going on here sunk in after that.
Right.
I was a little bit surprised that Kate wasn't more like distressed by that fact and start to panic, like, what's son doing to my baby? You know, that's kind of what my thought was. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Like, you know, I already thought that son was like conspiring to do something with Aaron at that point. And so I'm going, okay, you'd better go get your son right now. Something weird is going on.
About Kate's reaction, like, I was so focused on Jack that that thought didn't even cross my mind of like, oh man, then what's son's real intentions?
Yeah.
Oh, son.
Alright. So, and Kate Jack in the chat says, why is Ben's lawyer working for Claire's mom? You know, she mentioned some reason, but I can't remember what it was. Kind of fuzzy on that.
Jack said that Claire's mom wanted a Oceanic settlement, and that he was representing her with, you know, for Oceanic to get the settlement.
But Kate Jack has a good question there. I was wondering the same thing myself. So then, how did Claire's mom get connected with Ben's lawyer in the first place? My guess is that probably what happened is that Ben sent his lawyer to go to Claire's mom and say, hey, I've got a proposition for you. You know, you should, try to get money out of Oceanic, and so I'll represent you. And probably made a deal that you couldn't refuse. Diesel99 in the chat says the psychic told her to hire him. I wonder if he's still around. That was a great character, and I want to see more of that, of the psychic. That was really kind of interesting.
Well, he has kind of been spot on, kind of.
Yeah. What was that guy's name? I'm trying to think.
Oh, man, I have no idea.
I'm trying to look it up.
Diesel929 pointed out, it's Richard Malkin.
Nice.
Thank you. Richard Malkin. Oh, that's kind of interesting. His name was Richard. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, Richard Malkin, okay. Yeah, and of course, if you want to know more about that, you can look up the article on Lostpedia. Malkin is Malkin. there was so much about Richard Malkin that I really wanted to know, like, what was going on. Like, was he really a fraudster? Because he sure seemed to predict some other things that were right on. And there's so much that's still totally unanswered about that character. So I hope they get back to that. That would be really funny if the psychic told Claire's mom to hire that lawyer. It would just go to show his, you know, how deep the conspiracy goes with that guy. So, all right, anyway. But I don't really think that's going to happen. I just think that would be funny. All right. So, back on the island, Juliet's nose starts bleeding now. So, like, pretty much everybody's had a bloody nose except for Dan, and I guess maybe because he has a constant. I don't know. And so it's, things are not looking too good. Oh, I guess Sawyer and John's noses haven't started bleeding yet either. So, they jump in time again, and they find a whole bunch of stuff in with French writing on it on the beach. And of course, my wife immediately goes, Daniel Rousseau's team, like, they jump back in time to you know, they're gonna meet Danielle and stuff. And and sure enough, you know, the next, you know, they cut to this lifeboat out in the water. It looks, you know, so much like you know, the whole scene with after the helicopter crashes in the water and they all get in this life raft, and something kind of similar is going on. It's kind of stormy. They see a body in the water, and I don't speak any French, so I couldn't understand any of what they were saying, but I'm sure it was just kind of the standard, you know, oh my gosh, you know, we need help. Oh, look, there's a guy in the water kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm sure, by the way, if anyone's really curious about what they said, that somebody will post that on forums or somewhere, a kind of a transcript or translation into English. But anyway, so we see the team coming to the island, and Rousseau's team finds a gin in the water.
Oh, man, I was so excited.
I'm like,
so excited.
You've got to be kidding me. So this whole time, like, with all these, like, time jumps, gin's body is floating in the water, and it's jumping through time all these times in a row.
Oh, yeah.
I was really hoping. I was sitting there going, oh, don't let them have a flash while he's on the lifeboat. Don't let him have a flash while he's on the lifeboat.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, what's going to happen right now if there's another flash? Like, he's just going to be floating in the water again, I guess.
Exactly. So that means then that the freighter was obviously within the perimeter of when the island moved, because otherwise one would assume that...
And yet the helicopter wasn't, even though the helicopter was actually closer to the island.
And yet the Zodiac was, too. Like, but that was the only thing that popped in my head, was he must have been within that range. Like, he must have just been on the fringe of it like the Zodiac was.
Well, the helicopter, though, congested, would have been just slightly farther away from the island, right, by that point?
No, the helicopter was closer because they were flying back to the island.
Right, because they were running out of gas.
Oh,
so my guess is that they were, like, above the radius.
Okay.
They were outside the dome of Lost.
It's like that's the only way to explain it logically. Like, they were just above it.
So you've already thought about that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Like, that makes no sense, but I'm going to roll with it. No, it's true, though. It's like, it's for some reason, yeah, that would make sense that you would think that they would, too. Maybe it's because they're no longer near the island, but I don't understand, like, why the helicopter went.
But no, it was like they were flying right back to the island. Jack says,
right.
Frank flies back to the island, and then it's, you know, where's the island? Where the hell's the island?
Right. All right. Well, anyway, I don't know. Whatever. So he was above the radius somehow. Maybe he was, like, sort of bubble-shaped, and so...
And I don't think we're ever getting that answer. I think that's just, left up to fandom to sort out.
Well, the whole thing with Jin being alive, okay, so, like, I wrote down in my notes, like, frantically writing during the commercial break, I'm like, okay, Rousseau's team finds Jin in the water. This must be present time Jin. His body must have been jumping in time like the rest of Locke's team. Is it remotely possible that Jin is still alive? And, of course, later in the episode, we find out he is, and I'm like, what? How is he alive? But here's my theory on it, and this just kind of came to me as we were discussing this, like, moments ago. So I think what happened is that it's something just like the Jin still has a purpose on the island, and exactly like how the island would not let Michael kill himself. I think the same thing happened with Jin. The island is not letting Jin die because he still has some purpose to fulfill, something he's got to do for the island.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. Like, Jin, he's floating around, like, forever. The guy totally would be dead by now. Oh, my gosh, how many hours have passed and he's just been floating in the water?
Because you got to assume it's been, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
Everything. Where was the Dharma Shards? Come on.
The Dharma Shards.
Right.
Jin eaten by Dharma Shark.
So that's the only answer that even makes any sense to me at all, is that the island saved Jin. That the island still has some purpose for Jin and saved his life.
I think that's true. I think we can call that true.
Oh, all right. I'll reluctantly call that true. It does make the most sense. It does.
Thank you.
There's no other explanation for it.
I know. There's no other explanation for it.
All right. Well, hey. Maybe I figured out a secret. I don't know. Well, we'll find out. Hopefully they'll be back to doing, like, the regular audio official Lost podcast this week, and I'll be, they'll confirm that. No, I doubt they would confirm it this soon. They'll probably wait a couple of weeks and maybe, I don't know. Maybe they'll slowly, gradually reveal that on the show. They've got to get some kind of explanation. I mean, he's floating in the water way too long for that to be realistic.
I forgot about Sawyer with the gunshot wound when he was floating around. Like, was that season, end of season one before season two?
Yeah, that's a lot of salt in that wound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should have died a couple of times before he lived.
Right. I mean, because you think of, like, harsh conditions and being left out in a tropical climate for 2 days. I can't be healthy one way or the other.
Right. Okay, so moving on. This is where the ad for the Castle series premiere starring Nathan Fillion aired. So we've got Kate's husband showing up in an advertisement. And then getting back to the show, there's a flash forward. Ben, you know, Kate basically accuses Ben of being the one who's been trying to take Aaron. And Jack's like, no, no. And Ben's like, no, it's cool. Yeah, I did it.
No, that's okay.
And I'm like, Ben, you idiot. What are you doing? Of course now she's not going to want to go with you. Like, what is this problem?
So again, you want to get people to do things for you. You know, you should be nice about it. You shouldn't have to be a jerk about it.
But, you know, but then again, he also had this guy who he, you know, potentially may have hired to trank her. I don't know. I'm still not sure I agree with that whole thing about the guy in the hospital that tried to trank Saeed working for Ben. But
I think it's a different group of people.
I do too, but I just think it would be kind of funny if he had a backup plan to, like, just tranquilize everybody and take him back.
It's like, well, if all else fails, shoot with tranquilizer.
I would have loved dragging them all back to the island. Anyway, so Ben admits he's the one who's been trying to take Aaron. And then we see Sun hiding in a car with Aaron, sleeping in the back seat. Sun's in the front and driver's side. She's holding a gun. She sees her gun on the seat, I guess. So she grabs her gun, starts to get out of the car, right? So we can assume that she's probably going to go after Ben. And I think that's kind of where they leave off that scene. We, of course, won't get any of the rest of the answers to what's going on there until next week. But so the island, we now see Jin alive on the beach. You know, well, he's on the beach anyway, and the other French folk are all talking to each other, and Jin wakes up, and I'm like, okay, no way. So Danielle Rousseau talks to Jin and introduces herself. By the way, she's much younger, you know, and somebody pointed out in the chat a few minutes ago that she looks like she's aged more than 16 years, by the way. Like, you know, because Alex, of course, was born on the island, and we see that, you know, that Danielle Rousseau is definitely pregnant here, very pregnant, so she's about to have the baby sometime soon. And so probably roughly 16 and a half years maybe have passed between then and kind of when the present time is on the island. And she definitely looks like she's aged more than 16 years, but, you know, whatever. So Danielle introduces herself. Oh, go ahead. Do you have a thought on that?
Well, I was just going to make the comment of, like, well, she has been living on her own in the jungle, and she did kill her team. So, I mean, I'm assuming that that's just the aging
process. And she is crazy.
Right, you know, like, I'm assuming that, you know, you're not going to keep your glowy skin under those conditions.
Right, and several people in the chat have pointed out that she did not have any kind of moisturizer or anything like that, so.
No, there was no Avon lady coming to her house.
Right. So, okay, whatever. So maybe she really did age that much in 16 years. I don't know. It's pretty sad, though. I mean, seriously, she, like, you know, I'm not going to, this isn't Cranky Fanatic, so I'm not going to get too into my complaints about that. I'm sure Big O probably talked about that on his
You know, tonight. He didn't. He was sick. He was off his A game today.
Poor guy. I hope he feels better.
He was a little sick, but yeah.
Well, I'll rant about it on his behalf then, so.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, anyway, I've talked about that part enough. So, but Montan is also there. Danielle also mentions Montan. And this is the guy that we found out, you know, in an episode long ago that that he lost his arm at some point, and we don't know why or how exactly. And so that would be really cool. I mean, on an official podcast a long time ago, they said that they really wanted to revisit the Danielle Rousseau's team plot line. And so finally, they're maybe going to give us some answers to this. I hope they give us some interesting things, like at least show us how Montan lost his arm, for goodness sakes, before they jump in time
they
again.
They have to.
It was a gym. I'm calling
I mean,
it
God,
right
just the fact that they, like, did this and mentioned Montan. They did it twice. They actually mentioned Montan, yeah, like in the raft in the first scene where they're pulling out Jin.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, so they've made such a big deal about Montan, like, you know, we are going to find out,
yeah,
like, how this dude lost his arm. But they would not make this huge deal of this guy and then bring him back and not tell us.
It's either Jin or Locke. I'm calling it right now. It's either going to be Jin or Locke.
Well, it was in the dark territory where, like, the smoke monster we know is, and I don't know, it was on their way to the Black Rock. So it's like, but Jin doesn't know all, like, he doesn't know any of that. Like, he wasn't there for that whole explanation or anything. So
that's true.
Like, it'll be very cool to see.
Right. Okay.
Because I'm assuming now we're gonna get Danielle's backstory. You know,
yeah, that was awesome.
That.
Yeah, we better.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the producers have said that we weren't done with her anyway, you know, and that there was more to her. So it'd be nice to see her flashback now and see her kind of, her time on the island up until when the Losties get there.
I had no idea how they were going to pull off, like, showing us her backstory without her, she's dead and she's not on the show anymore.
Right.
So I'm like, that all makes sense now.
Though I will say it would have been nice if they just used Mira Furlan, you know, like the same actress.
Right.
I don't know. It feels kind of cheap that they're using another actress, but whatever, I guess. You know, that was the arrangement.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way too, but then again, I mean, you know, maybe it was contract things, you know. I think the whole reason that they killed off her character, from what they've said on the official podcast, was something about how she really didn't like living in Hawaii. She just didn't want to be on the show anymore, and so they killed her character off.
Right.
Well, like, from what I had found out, like, she had been banned from Croatia because, like, whatever political craziness was going on in Croatia for years, and she finally got allowed back into Croatia, and, like, she moved back to Croatia with her family, and she got her house back and all this stuff. But she, like, been banned from Croatia for, like, 10 years or something. So,
that's weird.
Huh.
Yeah. So I think it had something to do with that. But I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I can't wait till they show us her story.
I'm so excited. I've been dying to see her story ever since they introduced her, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that'll be exciting, too. I hope they get into, you know, at least a few interesting points of the story, like the sickness, you know, and why she started killing everybody.
Yeah.
it feels like we're finally getting to the meat of things.
Yes.
Does anybody,
yeah,
I mean, but, and by the way, regarding the sickness, I really think that the sickness is like the temporal displacement. I think that somehow, like, they're screwed up because of the whole time thing, and they basically, they didn't go through, like, whatever special way that you have to go to get to the island without getting sick. I mean, if you think back to, like, what happened with the folks on the freighter, how they were all going crazy and, you know, and, you know, some of them lost their place in time and some of them just sort of acted insane, and I don't know. I'm guessing the sickness has something to do with that, either kind of temporal displacement or sort of peripheral sicknesses. I don't know. But I'm kind of guessing that's what's going on, or what's going to happen with Danielle's team. So I really hope they are able to stick with this plot line for a little bit of time.
Yeah, same.
Oh, Bailey Bear has a good thought in the chat. Will we see the real Henry Gale? I would expect probably not, like, not the actual man whose name was Henry Gale. But when she said that, it made me think, will we see Ben? Because at some point, you know, Ben sort of adopted Alex. I mean, obviously, we'd have to jump forward in time, you know, however long, you know, until Ben,
like, a month,
Alex,
yeah,
or whatever happened, you know. but yeah, that would be really interesting if we saw, you know, how Alex was taken by the others. That would be kind of cool to see all that. I don't know how long we're going to stick with this plot line before they jump through time again, but I mean, as Dan said, I mean, it could be 5 minutes or whatever he said, 5 million years or something. So he's not really sure how long, you know, if there's, there doesn't appear to be any sort of set time that they stay before jumping again. So that could be interesting. Let's see. So I'm looking through my notes here. So Danielle shows much younger and pregnant. Montan is there. Jin realizes he realizes as Danielle Rousseau introduces herself and says her full name, Jin's face falls like, oh my goodness. There's no way that's really Danielle Rousseau, because she's obviously much younger than Danielle Rousseau. And so this is maybe how Jin is going to figure out that, wait, did I just travel back in time? I mean, it's weird because I don't really know how much Jin knows about the whole temporal displacement and what's going on.
Yeah, but like he at least knows that like there's this white flash of light that keeps taking him from like daytime to nighttime and from like rain to no rain. So he must know that something weird is going on.
He hasn't been conscious while the flashes have been going, right? Because he's been lying, you know, face down in the water or whatever.
Yeah, he's got to be passed out this whole time.
But yeah, I mean,
he was face down, yet his face is very sunburned. So he must, I mean, come on. He hasn't been face down for 2 days on this raft without waking up.
All right. Sorry, I interrupted somebody.
I was gonna jump back to because I have just had a random thought pop in my head to when you were saying that how Dan said he didn't know if the island was gonna move every 5 minutes or every 500 years. I wonder if it's on a 100-minute loop. Like I wonder if it's just the flash is going off every 108 minutes, you know, because of the
pressing the button.
Well, because I had the thought that, like, the bomb had been buried, and that's why they had set the, you know, and that's obviously why they were doing the whole countdown in the hatch and having to enter the numbers. So I'm wondering if it's on, if that's the loop that it's on. Is that this thing is still releasing a charge every 108 minutes, causing the island to move? That makes any sense whatsoever.
Who knows?
the pushing the button is making him jump.
Wait, so you're saying that the flash happens every 108 minutes?
Right.
Hmm.
Because my whole thought is that the whole point of the button was to make sure the charge didn't happen. Now that the charge is going off, it's just a larger charge. So it's just, instead of blowing things up, it's just moving the island. It's just moving the island as it goes.
But the thing is that the hatch only existed since after the incident, which we know the hatch existed around 1980 in its current form.
Right.
So,
right, but like Locke's legs went out in that same place where he got shot in the legs on the banyan tree by the plant. You know, like things that were happening like in the same place and different time zones. So they're like,
it could be. I don't know. I don't think we have enough to know yet. But yeah, that could be. Yeah.
It wasn't a full sentence that I said. It was just sort of a fragment of an idea.
But maybe
the act of pushing the button is somehow saving the people who are jumping or helping them somehow later.
Well, because the thought originated from when Daniel also said, you know, like it's almost like a record skipping and that it's on like a constant loop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the flashes are happening whenever hypothetically, if you were to look at the island as a record player, it would hit that skip, you know.
Right. Okay.
Why not?
This is a thought.
I know, I'm sorry. I went off on a weird tangent there. Sorry.
Well, no, it makes sense. All right, so let's see. That's pretty much it. For I think that's kind of where the show leaves off. Jin realizes, oh, my goodness, you know, this is Danielle Rousseau. And the audience, I guess, is supposed to think that, too, as if we didn't already figure it out by then. But So let's see. I didn't really see too much in the way of Easter eggs, but let's see. I'll definitely put a link in the show notes when I post them to the the documents that Sun got delivered to her. Because I think there's going to be a lot of a lot of information in there that's going to mean something in future episodes. We've got a new name, Li Qin, and we have no idea what he has to do with, you know, Sun getting a gun to go, you know, go after Ben. So I'm really curious about that. Hopefully we'll get into that. And hopefully somebody who has a better screen cap, you know, if there is another better screen cap out there, can sort of transcribe that. A lot of it is pretty legible, so I would be surprised if we see some transcripts of that pretty soon. So I'll definitely post that in the show notes. Let's see. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it up to the preview for next week. Which, if you consider that a spoiler, then this would be the time to tune out. Just the things I noticed from the preview. Is anybody who's called in leaving? By the way.
Nope. Second.
Okay, just making sure. All right, so the preview. These are the things I noticed, and if you notice anything else, you know, let me know. Ben said, all those people back on the island need our help. Locke says to Sawyer, he's trying to find a way off the island. That should be fairly obvious. It looks like, if I remember right, he was grabbing onto some sort of a rope, almost like he was going to go into a well or, I don't know, go down a cliff. I don't remember what exactly it looked like. It was a brief little scene, but it seemed like he was holding onto a rope or something, like he was about to go down into something. I could be wrong. Kate tells Jack that he's crazy. If I'm not mistaken, I think she was talking to Jack and said that Jack was crazy to think that, you know, that Kate was going to go along with this whole thing. Sun is about to shoot Ben, but Ben stops her by telling her, Jin's still alive, and I can prove it. So Ben knows that Jin's still alive, and I want to see what his proof is. but that's kind of cool that, you know, Ben is trying to get Sun back on his side so that they can all go to the island, I guess. Because I assume that they want to get Sun back there with them. And so maybe this was all part of Ben's plan. Like it sort of seems like Ben must have known that Sun was going to show up there with Aaron, and you know, because here they're all meeting all in the same place. They're all there except for Hurley now, right? All the Oceanic Six and Ben, and I assume Locke's body.
Yeah, because Hurley's in jail. So
right. So Hurley's the only wild card right now, but the lawyer is supposed to be trying to break him out, you know, or, well, not break him out, but to try to get him out through legal channels. And I would assume, I don't know, my guess is that they could get him out on bail or something like that. And then I'm sure that, you know, Ben could arrange for some way to pay for whatever it would cost.
Well,
but,
Sawyer had said in the episode that the hearing was going to be the next morning, but
yeah,
and by the afternoon. So one would assume that he'd be free by like 2-3-ish.
Right, but they've only got like what did Ms. Hawking say? They had how many hours?
70 hours.
70 hours.
Okay, so I guess that might give them enough time. But then again, like Ben earlier in this episode was telling Jack, you know, make sure you hurry when he's like going after Kate because we don't have much time. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, but you've got, I don't know, a fair amount of time. It's not like, you know, how quickly he drives to go see Kate is really going to make a difference. Unless Ben knew that his lawyer was going to be leaving at a specific time and that Kate was going to be following. Maybe that's what he meant by that. I don't know. so then the next thing in the preview that I wrote down is I think Sun said, move away, Kate. And that's pretty much all I've got in my notes. So I guess the biggest things there are that Kate is like, you know, you're crazy, but there's no way I want to go back to the island. And then now Sun, who's about to shoot Ben, is perhaps going to be persuaded otherwise when Ben tells her that Jin's still alive and he can prove it. Anybody get anything else out of the preview? All righty. So I think that's about it. Oh, I could look up the episode title if anyone is curious. I don't really
the
like
Little Prince.
Well, okay, no, well, that's this episode's title. I mean, like, next week's episode.
Ah.
Is that too spoilery for anybody? Okay, here goes. The episode is going to be titled "This Place Is Death," whatever that means.
Oh,
sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, it sounds very scary.
So I look forward to that, finding out why it's called "This Place Is Death." Maybe I'll ask my wife if she's not crazy. She sure called this one. So, all right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week. So, definitely, you know, keep checking out the blog. Like I said, I'll be posting some things there sometime within the next couple weeks, I hope. I'm doing a little bit of research trying to contact some of the extras who played the Planet 15 survivors who later became others, and I don't know if I'm going to get any response back from them, but at least they're making an attempt. I'll probably, you know, post it whenever I kind of feel like it's well written enough, and regardless of whether I've gotten any reply back. But it would be kind of fun if I got a reply from somebody one way or the other, letting me know like whether they knew that they were supposed to be, you know, it was supposed to be the same character playing both roles, or whether there were two completely different background people and they know that for a fact, or, you know, I don't know if they'll even know, but I thought it was worth a shot.
You should get, like, an interview, like an audio interview.
Yeah, I'll try for that. One of the actors that I'm trying to get in touch with through MySpace, so that's the only way I know how, you know, to get a hold of him, is Karen Zorn, and he's had a couple of close-ups, and he's mostly in the background, like most of them, but in the scene where Kate is being, is kind of barging into Jack's room in New Otherton, and Jack's like, hey, you know, you're not supposed to be here, and then the others bust in. One of the others was this actor, Taron Zorn, and he actually was there during Jack's speech, where the Live Together or Die Alone comes from, when he's giving that speech. He was there in the background among all these other A-15 survivors. So,
wow.
I don't know. I mean, it could totally be just recasting the actor in another role, but I'm really curious whether, you know, this is just something that, you know, we haven't noticed too much of. And other than, of course, the people who wrote these articles on Lostpedia and pointed out the fact that, you know, the actors played different roles. But I don't know. Like, I haven't seen much discussion of it. So I'll let you know if I hear back from either of these actors that I'm trying to contact. But one way or the other, I'm going to post a little bit about that on the blog. And then I'm not sure if I'm going to record it live, but I'll definitely post a podcast episode too for those who just like to listen to the podcast. All right. Anyway, that's about it for tonight. So until next time, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is The Lost Meister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.